This is the State of Things from the Upstage Cabaret at Triad Stage in downtown Greensboro. I'm Frank Stacio. Thank you very much. High Point has had the same mayor for most of the last 20 years, Becky Smothers. She got back a medical report recently that suggested a possible recurrence of cancer that she beat 5 years ago. So she decided not to run again for the city's top spot. Instead, she'll run for an at-large city council seat. And now five candidates are vying for the job that she is leaving behind. Greensboro Bureau Chief Jeff Tiberi joins me right now to talk about the mayoral race and give us a news roundup in the Triad. Jeff Tiberi, welcome to the State of Things.
Good afternoon.
So let's talk about this. First of all, Mayor Smothers, most of the last 20 years, she's a very popular mayor, obviously.
She is a pretty popular mayor. She is a nonpartisan mayor, but she really is a Democrat, and she would tell you that. I did a story about a year ago, and she said at that point she was thinking about not jumping back into the race again. She's 73. She's spent 16 years as mayor of High Point, and she has used the term fresh leadership or kind of a spark, some new invigorating life to the political picture in High Point. And she's been thinking about this for a while, so she's going to not be mayor come January. She's going to run for city council seat.
What kind of a system do they have? Is it city manager? Is mayor? How important role is mayor in High Point?
There are 8 city council seats and a mayor. And for the first time in, I guess not 20 years, but Becky Smothers will not be the mayor. All 8 of those city council seats will be on the ballot, and we know for sure that there will be a new mayor and also 3 new city council members. So some fresh blood for sure.
But she is going to run for a council at large, that seat, right?
She is. So juxtaposed to her age and the fact that she's been doing this for a while, she would like there to be some experience in city council. She doesn't want to say goodbye to it quite yet. One of her projects, one of her, I think, 5-year plan type of things is to help bring a new senior center to High Point. And I think from talking to her, that's going to be one of her main initiatives, main goals, as opposed to having, a dozen things to do. She really can make that kind of her focus if she wins this seat, and she probably will.
What are the things that people agree on have been her accomplishments over these 20 years?
I think that, talking about legacy or talking about some of the things she's done, High Point really has grown the furniture market in the time that she's been there. In terms of square footage, I can give you the numbers that it's gone from about 3.5 million square feet, the market itself, to more than 11 million square feet. So, I mean, just by the math, the showroom, the square footage space of the market has tripled. And I think that 30, 40 years down the road, she's going to be remembered in large part for helping kind of weather the Las Vegas storm, if you will. Las Vegas started this furniture market. And one of the things she did certainly wasn't unanimously popular at the time, was she went to the state to try to get some more support, some more resources, so that High Point could continue to try to do what it has done for decades, for a century, and kind of reestablish itself and kind of brush off this Las Vegas effort.
Well, and I think what hurt Las Vegas was that motto that if for the furniture market anyway, if you buy it here, it stays here. That's a problem for furniture, if you think
right.
about it. So she was the beneficiary of that. So now tell us about her contenders, the people who are running.
Bernita Sims has been a city councilwoman since 2003. Chris Whitney and Coy Willard, Matthew Fowler are the 4 candidates. There was a 5th, Tammy Hallfield, and she pulled out of the race actually yesterday to deal with family stuff. So there are 4 contenders, and at this point it's tough to tell because there haven't been any polls. They have all raised between $5,000 and we think $15,000, $17,000. So they're all in the same kind of range when it comes to money. And there's a little divergence between them. Sims is a more left-leaning proponent of revitalizing the urban core, as she puts it, in High Point, putting some more money into that. Whitley would like to drop taxes. One of his main stumping points is that of all the cities 100,000 people or larger population-wise in North Carolina, High Point has the highest property tax rate tax rate, and he wants to do something about that.
Any idea what the real important issues to the constituents are, to the voters of High Point?
I think these are two key ones, the taxes and also what to do with downtown. And it's interesting because, you know, market only goes on for 20 days out of the year. But for some of these business owners, for some of these property owners, they make enough in rent. They make more in rent through those 20 days and, you know, having a showroom for leasing that space out for a month and a half or 2 months than they would if it were a different kind of industry and they were leasing it out 12 months out of the year. So you go through parts of the furniture market and you go through parts of downtown at times. I hate to say it feels like a ghost town, but it almost feels like a ghost town sometimes. When market's there, I mean, it's bustling and vibrant, but that's not always the case. So what to do with downtown and how to develop it? Are there new strategies to take certain parts of downtown in a different direction are key?
I want to change subjects a little bit here. Guilford County is one of the very few in the country that has taken some large banks to court in a lawsuit against so-called robo-signing, that whole scandal and the story, Guilford County, and I think the case goes to court today, right?
It does. The banking court in Raleigh will hear this case. Jeff Thigpen is the Register of Deeds here in Guilford County, and he uncovered about 4,500 mortgages, and he believes there are probably many more, but he uncovered about 4,500 mortgages in Guilford County that were robo-signed, which is the practice of third parties essentially falsifying mortgages, which isn't necessarily a problem immediately, certainly can come back to hurt a homeowner significantly and seriously, and allows a bank to go into foreclosure when the owner might not have agreed to everything that would lead to foreclosure. So what he wants is he's filing a lawsuit against some big-time players here, Bank of America, JP Morgan Chase, Citigroup, and others, and would like to win, obviously, and get appointed investigator to come in, find out how widespread the problems were. And this is not happening in just Guilford County. This is part of the housing bubble that's happened all over the place. And would like the banks to come in and fix this.
You know, it's pretty fascinating because it was a national scandal. I mean, the idea that people are being, you know, in this downturn, the people at the very bottom end of the chain are the ones who are hurt the most. They're losing their houses now. The banks, who are, you know, in many ways responsible for some of these loans and some of the problems that happen, are actually reclaiming the property. And yet Guilford County is one of the very few that has stood up and said, look, we think this is illegal. We're taking it to court, or it's a civil violation at least.
Mm-hmm. I talked to him about 6 months ago, and I asked him a question similar to that. I just said, you know, why? And this is going on everywhere. What made you push forward with this? And he, real matter-of-factly, Jeff said, you know, we thought somebody should do it. He believed at the time, and I don't know this for a hard fact, but he wasn't aware of any other counties, municipalities, cities in the country that had filed a similar suit. So he's leading the way on this.
Well, you'll be able to report on this for years to come, I think, with all those players involved. So let's talk about the food trucks in Greensboro. There will be a food truck scene here, maybe, at least temporarily.
There is a food truck scene. We're in week three of a two-month pilot program, and what it allows is for four different food trucks to be in a specific area down near the ballpark here in Greensboro. The food trucks have been rotating each day. There are four for lunch, four for dinner, and it's been pretty popular. I've been over there a couple of times. I drove by during the first week. I wasn't able to stop by, and it was a sunny afternoon, and there were legitimately 200 people eating, waiting for food, lined up for the food truck. So it is a It has a very passionate group behind it, but of course, as we've heard and seen with other cities, Durham, Asheville, this isn't. Not everybody loves it.
Right. No, there's ways. Although, an interesting. So when the struggle came up in Durham, what they found was, you know, it's unfair to brick and mortar places. They're not paying taxes, and they can just drive up anywhere. And then somebody pointed out that the last four brick and mortar restaurants to go in Durham all started out as food trucks. And they said, well, wait, maybe we should relax the rules a little bit. So,
right.
So are they looking to Durham and Raleigh for their experience now to figure out what went on there?
It's interesting because if you look at the cities, Asheville and Chapel Hill only allow food trucks on private property. Durham is largely hands-off. Chapel Hill has a $600 license that a food truck has to obtain. Asheville limits the number of food trucks in downtown, And Greensboro is trying to find its way. One of the concerns, obviously, with the brick-and-mortar aspect of this is a concern. Another question people have raised is, are there enough people in Greensboro? Is there enough of a downtown? Are there enough people working down here, living down here, to support food trucks and also to support some of the restaurants that are already in place? So we'll see.
We will see, and we'll check in with you on that. Anything else we should know going on here in the Triad?
I don't think so. There's plenty, but you're working against the clock.
We are working against the clock.
I left
you 30 seconds to answer that question. So we'll come back. We'll be back in a month.
Eight Wake Forest football players were suspended last couple of weeks. People are talking about that.
We will talk more about that when we're back here in a month. Jeff, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Just ahead, Professor Mark Rifkin talks about, ask the question, when did Indians become straight? More on that. But before we do that, we're going to hear from the band, The Brand New Life. They're going to play us out of this segment. We're going to hear a lot more from them in our last segment. And I got to tell you that this is the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Here they are, Brand New Life.